Blog Talk Radio.
Janeway, Spock, Spear, Locke is acting very weird. Captain Pike, Sisko's wife, Klingons and the afterlife. Boimler, Tendi's dog, Ransom is very hard. Four drive, Black Alert, Giorgio has gone berserk. DJ bad left, Edward is an idiot, Spock is dead, Worf is wed, Chekhov's wearing red. Data's cat, Kempak sat, Q has had enough of that. Beam me up, make it so, everybody let's go.
We know about the series, you can join us live by picking up your phone now. We talk about the series, we're coming to you on your streaming services now. We talk about the series,
well, with that theme song, Trekkies and Trekkers around the globe, that means it's time for another episode of Trek Talk, and I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, and with me as usual are my Trek-sperts. We'll start off with Eric. Eric's out in Portland. How you doing tonight, Eric?
I am doing super great. Yeah, it's mid-50s, kind of rainy here, sort of typical Portland Northwest weather for the wintertime. And there was a very excellent episode of Prodigy I'm super excited to talk about. So it's going to be a good night.
Well, you know what? We're having a heat wave up here in Vermont. It's actually 32 degrees.
Ooh.
So my wife's got the windows cracked. It's a heat wave. It was 22 below zero with the wind chill factor last night.
That's
a heat wave. And so anyways.
It's like when Charles cools down to 95 in Las Vegas.
Yeah, he has a cold spell of 80 in Vegas. And, you know, and we also have with us Charles. Charles is out in Las Vegas. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing good. We actually haven't got up to 61 today.
I don't want to hear that.
But it's a little bit like Eric's weather. It's cloudy, but we're not going to get any rain because it's too dry.
Big snowstorm rolling here. Leslie, it was 51 below zero up in Saranac Lake last night up where Leslie is. If you can believe that. Wow. That's cold. So, guys, we have a great, great, and I mean great show planned for you guys tonight. We're going to be live for the next 2 hours. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. Currently 7:30 Eastern Standard Time. And we have with us on the line the one, the only Noah Averbatch Katz. And you guys probably know him best. I'm going to say probably as Mr. Tilly, but that's not all. He also played Rin on Star Trek Discovery Season 3. He played in 3 episodes, Rin. Do you guys remember? He's the Andorian that Osira chopped off his antenna. And he can be seen in Scavengers, Sanctuary, and There Is a Tide, which was an episode directed by the awesome Jonathan Frakes. But that's not all. Noah is also an avid D&D player. He even plays D&D with the cast members on the set of Discovery. So we've got a lot to talk about with Noah tonight. Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. You give us a call and have your questions ready for Noah. We'll get you on the air live and you can ask your questions. So without any further ado, I'd like to introduce Noah. How are you doing tonight, Noah? Welcome
to
the show.
I'm doing good. Thank you for having me. I also refer to myself as Mr. Tilly, but only when Mary's not around because she says, shut up when I say that. And I think I need to re-record that theme song because I want to be in it. I feel like there's room for me either as Rin or just as Noah or as Mr. Tilly to get me in that theme song. So I'm ready.
So, absolutely.
You know, there's a funny story about that theme song.
years ago,
I mean, like back in the 90s, I was running Star Trek conventions in upstate New York, and a local TV station, Billy Joel, came to town, and we were having our Star Trek convention. So one of the guys at the station took the Billy Joel song, We Didn't Start the Series, and set it to the TNG, which was perfect for our convention since Marina Sirtis was going to be there. And it was great. Well, when I did the podcast, I blew off the dust, pulled it out, and we played it as our intro. But it didn't quite fit anymore because there's so much more Star Trek than TNG. So I sat down and I rewrote the lyrics. And Eric, our very own Eric, re-recorded it. And that's the version that we play before the show now. So
I think I'm going to get Billy Joel on the line and see if we can get him in studio to lay down extra lines for you.
Now we're talking.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah. I wonder if Billy Joel would do that for us.
Come on, buddy.
I think he would.
Yeah.
He's not
doing anything. Yeah, he's hanging out at Madison Square Garden for the next 28 weeks. He's got nothing to do. So before we get started, Noah, I talked to you a little bit in chat, but you have been and always shall be a Star Trek fan. You were a Star Trek fan before you were Mr. Tilly or Rin, correct?
This is true. I grew up, my mom, who I'm sure is tuning in right now. Hi, Mom. Hi, Rochelle. she basically put me down in front of the TV and was like, look, I'm not going to decide your life for you. I'm not going to decide what you're going to do for a job or who you're going to be or whatever. But I am going to decide that you are a Star Trek fan. So get watching. And so basically from a young age, I grew up watching reruns of TNG, and I grew up watching the very last few episodes of Voyager, and then all of the TNG movies. And then when I was, 12, 13, watching Enterprise week to week, like in the old days when it just, you have to go on you have to be there at the right time in the right place. And all my friends would come over and we would have what was called a Star Trek party where we'd watch an episode of Enterprise. And my mom would write up a quiz about all the random stuff that happened in the background, like, what was the ambassador's last name or what color was the engineer's uniform who exploded early on, to really train us to start looking at all that, hardcore Star Trek geekdom stuff. And then every once in a while, she'd throw me and a friend or two in the back of our van, and we'd drive to Pasadena or Sacramento or wherever and go to the basement of some Marriott and do a Star Trek convention.
Wow. So who's the earliest, who's the first actor you met at a convention and you can remember?
Oh, I'm sure my mom's screaming at her computer right now, probably because she can't get it to work, but maybe because of this. But I don't really remember who the first one I met, There's a picture of me with Will Wheaton. I remember meeting Robert Picardo, and I think maybe I might have – no, that was probably too early to meet John Billingsley. We have our picture taken, a family picture with Patrick Stewart together. We have an autograph of Brett Spiner. Yeah, all sorts of all kinds of people. It was different back then because you didn't have a cell phone to record any of it in the same way. So it all you left, and then three. It's all. I'm sure my mom remembers perfectly, but I don't remember. But I do remember. I remember one time me and some friends were in like the gym of a hotel, and I think Robert Picardo walked by and just sort of waved at us because we all knew who he was, and we waved at him, and we just thought it was the coolest thing that had ever happened in our lives. So I remember some things very distinctly.
Yeah, Star Trek conventions were different back then than we have today. Simply be no multimedia. I remember going to a convention, and Marina Sirtis would do a Patrick Stewart impersonation and call him Old Baldy. And she would tell us all kinds of things. Oh, we just filmed an episode where Q came back. Mm. And then she'd go, I wasn't supposed to say that. And But we couldn't run home and put it on the internet and tell everybody because we didn't have that. So
yeah, what are you going to do about it?
Yeah, what are you going to do? So that was back in the good old days, actually. But now you're on the other side of the table.
That's true.
So things
are
a little, they're a little bit different now. So what do conventions look like from the other side of the table?
Well, it's been a great experience. I really felt like even when I was shooting, that my experience wouldn't be complete until I got to do conventions. So I worked really hard to try and make that happen. And I've got to do quite a few so far. I was in Vegas. I was at Dragon Con, which isn't a Star Trek convention, but it's still a convention. I did a convention in New Jersey, and then I did one in London. And I've just had a really amazing time. You know, I think one of the great things about it is that because I've been on the other side of the table, I really comprehend how meaningful those interactions can be with people and how they can stick with you and really buoy your spirits for long, long after the convention has finished, you know? And so I feel really lucky to be on the other side of the table in a position where I can offer people those experiences, you know, an experience that is memorable and that is personal and that really feels like you get to have a unique and special experience that kind of makes you smile when you think back on it. So, you know, that's sort of what I try to do on my side of the table now. And it's just, for me, it's just so much fun because everyone who comes to see me is so excited and is just happy to talk to me, and I'm happy to talk to them and happy to learn their story and their, you know, their Star Trek history, which is always interesting to me. And you know, it's still, I still kind of feel more comfortable on the fan side of things, if I'm being honest. You know, I've been on the fan side for 30 years and I've been on the other side for two. So I feel way more comfortable in the fan world. So it's just been really fun to get to go and get to go do that, you know, and get to, you know, judge a costume contest. And, you know, I'm sure you all know, and everybody listening knows, sometimes at a Star Trek convention, a panel might start to lag or drip or, you know, be very dry sometimes. So I really make it my business when I'm on a panel to keep it as entertaining as possible and as unique as fresh so that you really have that fun experience, like you're seeing something really special and getting to be a part of it.
Now, did you ever get involved in cosplay when you were going to conventions? Did you ever dress up as a Klingon or an Andorian?
First off, and I know you know this, but when I was going to conventions, there was no such thing as, you know, quote unquote cosplay. People weren't cosplaying.
Yeah, we invented it.
They were dressing up as Star Trek characters and people were looking at them strange. You know what I mean? So, you know, it's fun. It's cool to see how it's like so mainstream and everything. But back in the day, it was not mainstream. And, you know, when I was going to conventions, I was like 12, 13, 14, and I was definitely not in the emotional or mental state to dress up fully. You know, I would throw on a shirt or something like that, something to signify that, you know, I was there and I was on your side. But, you know, my mom would throw on a uniform and go for it, and a friend or two would throw on some Vulcan ears and parade those around. And I think, you know, at the last convention, my dad in 2012 put on a full uniform with my mom and finally gave up the fight.
That's awesome. Does anybody come up to your table dressed up as Rin?
Well, I don't think anybody's done Rin, but I get a lot of Andorians. Rin's challenging because, you know, one of the great parts of cosplaying as an Andorian is getting to show off how you do your antenna, you know, like there's so many different ways to do them, whether they're prosthetics or whether they're like a hair piece or sewn into a wig or, you know, and if you have to cut them off, then you don't get to show off the best part. So I haven't seen anybody as Rin yet, but I've seen many, many wonderful Andorians.
So let me ask you this, a question about Rin. Growing up as a Star Trek fan, you've seen the, I guess I'm going to call them the classic Andorians.
Sure.
Well, the Discovery Andorians are quite a bit different from the original Andorians.
Sure.
So what did you think about that change when you sat down in the chair and they said, you're going to be an Andorian? And then
you saw
what Rin looked like, and it was quite different.
I'll tell you what. When you're sitting in the chair and they're putting stuff on you, you don't care. You know what I mean? Like at that point, I got to the chair. They could have splashed you know, a bunch of dirt on my face and said, go be on Star Trek. And I would have said, hell yeah. You know what I mean? So by that point, you lose that sort of, you know, let me think about this. Let me consider this. You're like, hell no. Get this shit on me as fast as possible so nobody changes their mind. I don't care what I look like. Get me on camera. I can't believe I'm going to be on Star Trek. I look like a freaking alien in the mirror. So, you know, on set, I definitely was not having any of those thoughts whatsoever. And, you know, it's interesting. Here, the thing about, like, a lot of the remodels and stuff is, I'm perfectly honest, like, a lot of it is stuff that I don't understand because it's deeply wrapped into, like, the prosthetics world, which is a world that I feel like all the people who work in prosthetics know really well, and Doug Jones. Doug knows that world incredibly well, and everyone who works in prosthetics knows it well. I don't really know it that well, because this was my first prosthetics job, and even there, you know, I'm just trying to learn how to act in the prosthetic, how to survive in the prosthetic. I don't really have the bandwidth to like investigate why certain decisions are being made. In terms of like, you know, comparing to Shran, it's interesting because, I mean, obviously, you know, Jeffrey looks amazing in those, and the motorized antenna are incredible, and he just looks awesome, and that powder blue is so nice. But, you know, when you go back and watch those episodes in HD, it looks amazing. It also kind of looks bad sometimes. You know what I mean? You can really see the seams. You can see the places where his lip is coming through. And so, I have a deep affinity for all Star Trek and all Star Trek prosthetics in particular, because now that I've done them, I look very closely at them. And part of that affinity is also realizing like, oh, now that this isn't on, you know, a 32-inch VCR TV anymore, and it's in my HDTV, I can see where like they're just like, you know, threw some paint on them and said, get out there, Jeff, you got this. but at the same time, like those, you know, those moving antenna are incredible. And I love them both. You know what I mean? Thankfully for me, I didn't have to make a decision. I had to put on the mask and make it work. And I got to love this mask, and I never looked and felt like, oh, I don't understand this alien in front of me. You know what I mean? When I'm looking at it, I never felt like I don't really get who this is supposed to be. And yeah, why they do redesigns, why they change it is stuff that is fairly opaque to me as the actor who just kind of wants to be on Star Trek.
And how long did it take you to step into the character over in the makeup chair? The whole, like, you know, so, your story's about Doug Jones, obviously.
Well, so Dougie is, you know, he's on another level. We can get to that in a bit. But for Scavengers, my first episode, so I had this little, like, beard. And that beard had to be applied strand by strand with glue. And then there were long white hairs that had to be scissor hand cut up to my face. So the whole prosthetic process from sitting in the chair, getting the full prosthetic on, getting it painted, putting the actual wig on, going back in the chair, and then putting the beard on, that took about 5.5 hours in total.
Wow.
And it was also because it was the first episode, people were, you know, each time you put the prosthetic on, it is a brand new, essentially rubber mask, that is just like light blue, and all of the texture and color and everything comes from physically painting that rubber mask. So especially in the first episode early on, the prosthetic people are learning how to paint the mask, how to make it look good, how to give it color and texture, and they have a bit more trial and error. So that added a bit of time. So in Sanctuary and There Is a Tide, the next two episodes, they got rid of the beard and everyone got a little bit more comfortable with how to paint it. So it came down to about 3.5 hours at the end.
Well, that's cool. So you mentioned There Is a Tide. I wanted to ask you, what was it like working for Jonathan Frakes. We hear all kinds of stories about how the actor can really relate to him because he's an actor himself.
Mm-hmm.
He's a legacy character from TNG. What was it like for you to be directed by the incredible Jonathan Frakes?
Yeah, so Jonathan directed Sanctuary and There Is a Tide. So he directed two of my three episodes, which was incredible. And I was so thankful I was wearing the mask, especially on Sanctuary, that first episode I did, because I was so nervous and excited and just sort of like overwhelmed to get to work with him that I was like absolutely bright red blushing under my mask. So I was so happy that there was something there to protect him from seeing how goofy I was. It was amazing. You know, he is a fantastic director all around. You know, it's great because he brings such a, excuse me, just like a Star Trek gravitas that everyone just sort of believes in whatever decision he's making. And he does understand actors, and he also understands like the challenges of making a science fiction show where it's like, oh, this thing that we want to do isn't working. You know, this cool idea we had is just too much. Let's find something else to do on the fly and like make it work. So that happened a couple of times, especially with Grudge, where we just sort of like changed it on the fly and it wound up being great. And he's just super open to listening to your ideas and your suggestions, but he also, he holds the whole episode in his head as well. So if your tone for the scene you're in is off with the next scene or two that you might not even be in or not know the tone of, he's able to really put you back on the right track. And then he's always singing like show tunes from 1925 at the top of his lungs and screaming all the time. So it's just a really fun set to be on.
Now you mentioned Grudge. Grudge has a new book out, actually, the Book of Grudge, and we're going to have Rob Perlman on to talk about that a little bit later in our season here. But what is Grudge a diva? What can you tell us about working with Grudge? Does Grudge hang out in his trailer all day and only come out once in a while? What is Grudge like?
Grudge, so I think there is a giant media apparatus designed to make Grudge as palatable and as paint Grudge in as good a light as possible. But I am a Grudge. I want to tell the truth about Grudge, is that Grudge is an absolute diva. Grudge was wanted to destroy me. Grudge wanted to attack me and bring me down. You know, in the scene with Grudge, okay, also what really, really gets my goat is like David has a scene with Grudge and it's like he's purring and nuzzling on David. Mary has a scene with Grudge and Grudge jumps on her back. It's so cute. Oh my God. Then I have a scene with Grudge. We're in that scene. Basically, you know, I'm freaking out. Detmer's flying this ship. I'm having a meltdown. Grudge is supposed to jump on my lap, nuzzle me, and calm me down so that we can continue. It doesn't ever, not even once does that get close to happening. They have to pick the cat was fine. The cat is fine. But they had to pick the cat up and throw it into my lap. And I had to catch it. You can see it's a really short, like, cut of this cat just sort of falling in my lap. And then I'm, like, holding this cat, and two or three takes in, my arms are truly sore from trying to pin this cat to my chest because it so badly wants to get away. Every time I let go, it sort of runs off the console, scampers away. You can see that my leather costume is just riddled in cat scratches, just absolutely destroyed by this cat. And I turned to Jonathan. I was like, look, Jonathan, I know that in the script it's supposed to comfort me, but like, I just don't think this is going to happen. Is it all right if I just throw this cat and just kind of get on with everything? He was like, yes. Oh my God, this is a great idea. Thank God for that idea. This cat is driving me insane. So take that information as you will, but I pick a grudge with Grudge. And I feel like in that book, in the book, it even like says something like, I don't know if I really get along with Andorians. And I'm like, oh, even that you're going to sugarcoat. So ask Perlman about that. That's all I'm saying.
So I also wanted to ask you, one of my favorite scenes is with you and Tilly, your wife, when you're talking about the Federation prison
summer
camp.
Summer
so what
camp.
Was that like to do a scene with your wife?
That was just so much fun. That was so much fun. You know, it was interesting because we went to graduate school. We went to Juilliard together. That's where we met. And we got to act quite a bit there together, but we hadn't really done anything together since we graduated. It's been almost 6 years maybe. And she had been working on Star Trek this whole time. And, you know, particularly in that first scene we did where I sort of storm into Saru's office and she sort of, you know, says, what are you doing? It was just so cool to walk into that room having really not been in a scene with her for almost 6 years and really feel like, oh my gosh, like she is so comfortable on the set. This is absolutely her house. She is kicking ass. This is so cool. I really need to step up my game. So that was really, really fun. And I also think, you know, one of the really funny things was that in that scene, I was like, all right, this is my standoff with Tilly. You know, I'm acting against my wife. Like, let's bring it. Let's go. You know, I'm going to come in super hot. Where's the goddamn captain? Get out of my way, you know. And she's giving it right back to me, and I'm thinking, oh yeah, we're really building up some fire between the two of us, and having a great time. And I finished the first take, and or maybe second take, and Jonathan comes over. He says, Noah, really good job, really good job. I just really need you to, just cool the fire a little bit. Just bring it back, you know. And I was devastated. You know, I was like, oh my god, I've let Jonathan down. This is terrible. I'm a horrible actor. And I, you know, the rest of the day, I'm just like, just try and get through, man. Just don't cry today. So we finished shooting and Mary and I are walking together back to our trailers. And I look over her and she's kind of, you know, looking down and looking kind of bummed. And I'm like, you know, sweetie, what's up? Are you okay? And she's like, well, like Jonathan came over to me and he told me I needed to chill out. I was going way too hard at you in this scene. I was like, oh my God, we both came in with the same idea to absolutely go absolutely ham at each other. And Jonathan was like, you guys need to chill out. This is not a scene about, you know, your marriage. This is about book down on the planet, which I just thought was so funny. And of course, Jonathan was right. When I watched the scene, it was like, oh yeah, this isn't about me and Tilly. This is about a book. So let's get back on task here. So that was really fun too.
Well, Tilly did put you in your place though. She did burn you pretty good.
She did. She absolutely did. And well deserved.
Yeah, she did. And I just want to ask you, we're going to take a quick break and then I'm going to turn you over to my co-host. I have one more question. As a Star Trek fan, what is your favorite Star Trek series? Now, we know it's Discovery, obviously, because you're on Discovery and Mary's on Discovery. So barring Discovery, what's your favorite Star Trek series?
Yeah, you know, I get asked this question a lot. Obviously, they're all great. You know, we've been doing a bit of rewatch of DS9, and that's an awesome show. But if I'm really being honest, I think my favorite is Enterprise. Part of it is because it was the show I grew up on, you know, so I really had it week to week and had that experience and not just sort of picking and choosing reruns. But I think what I really like about Discovery is that, I mean, sorry, about Enterprise, is that it is all out there. The good, the bad, the beautiful, the ugly, you know, it's all out on display. Best that Star Trek has to offer and the worst that Star Trek has to offer, the goofiest, the campiest. It's just like all in one package. And you can't really pick and choose episodes. You know, you can't say, oh, well, this episode's perfect, but we don't talk about, you know, Code of Honor or whatever. They're all sort of a hot mess in a way that I really love because you have to just take it as it is and love it as it is, starting with the theme song. So I think that one holds a very special place in my heart.
Well, I'm absolutely glad that you said that, Noah, because we're going to take our first station identification break. And just like our theme song, we have a song that we play where they're going to serve commercials, which was done by none other than Eric, who did our theme song. And I think you might like this one. We'll be right back, Noah.
Amazing.
Our phone number here is 646-668-2433. We'll be back after this very quick message. Give us a call and have your questions ready for Noah. Don't touch that dial.
It's been a long road getting from here to here. It's been a long time, but your time is finally here. You can feel the change in your thoughts right now. Nothing's in your way, and they're not gonna hold you down no more. No, they're not gonna hold you down, 'cause we've got faith, not your call. We wanna hear what you have to say. We've got faith to believe in your talking today. You've got faith in your fingers. All you gotta do is dial now. You can reach us right now. We've got faith. We've got faith. Faith that you call.
And we're back. We have Noah with us, and we're talking about Star Trek, obviously. And what do you think, Noah? Eric recorded that one for us too. You like
it? Beautiful. It's beautiful. It's played the way it's meant to be played, with a lot of heart.
There you go.
That one's perfect. You don't need to re-record that one.
Nice.
No. And we have a caller on the line here. Let me see if I can get my switchboard to work here. Hey, good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talk. And what's your name and where are you calling us from tonight? Hello?
Are you waiting for me?
Yay.
Hey, Shannon.
Hey.
You have a question for Noah?
Well, actually, I want to first give props to his mom for making him a Trekkie. Good job, Mom.
Good job, Mom. Yes, indeed.
Yes. And I know you talked about the fact, you've always been a Trekkie, but is it like the coolest job ever just to be on Star Trek since you're a fan?
The answer is 100% yes. Absolutely. You know, it was funny because there was a part of me that was really worried about being on the show, because what if I have a bad time? You know, what if this thing that is so meaningful to me and my mom and my family, and I get on show and everyone's a jerk, and I have a really bad time, and I just have a really negative connotation with this thing. But because of what I got to do on set, and because of the atmosphere and the other actors and the crew on set and how lovely they were, and then just how much fun I had getting to do all the little different Star Trek things, like getting beamed up while running, and then while I'm running on the other side of the ship, making sure I run into the wall, you know, like doing those little things. Getting my little medical space blanket, all sorts of just little Star Trek things that for me felt like a big deal, but to everybody else was like, what are you talking about? It was just so much fun to get to do.
That's awesome.
Noah, what is it like to walk onto the bridge of the Discovery and walk down the hallways and see some of those sets? Are they as impressive in person as they come across on screen?
They are more impressive in person. I'm telling you, it's like a full ship in these massive, massive soundstage. The first thing I started doing once everybody knew me on set, before I was even on the show, is just walking into empty soundstages. Obviously not okay, but I was like, well, who's going to stop me? They're off shooting another TV show. So I would walk around. You know, you can literally get lost in the hallways of Discovery. You know, you can be walking down, you turn, there's the transporter room, you turn, there's the mess hall, and then you make another turn, you're like, wait a second, like, I have to double back because I've gone in some loop and I don't know where I am. And then going on the bridge is amazing. You know, it's huge. You can sit in the captain's chair and press the button and the little side piece comes up and all the screens are all around, and it's all, you know, a lot of the screens are like LCD screens, so you can see like live feeds on them. It's just an amazing experience to just get to be able to walk around when nobody else is there too. I mean, that is so cool as well, to just sort of have it to yourself. It really just makes you feel like that really feels like you're living a Star Trek nerd's dream, you know?
Yay.
Wow. So let me ask you a Star Trek fan question, and then I'm going to turn you over to Eric. What
right.
do you think happened to Prime Lorca? You think he's still around somewhere, or do you think he's gone and forgotten? As a fan,
as one of us. As a fan, I would think that Prime Lorca goes to the Mirror Universe. He's not lasting very long. I think he's freaking toast. That's my fan answer. That's my fan answer. You can take it or leave it, but that's my fan answer.
That's a fair answer. That's because we had Dayton Ward on the show, and he wrote a book about. Help me out here, Eric. I'm about to get the title wrong.
That one was Desperate Measures.
Desperate Measures,
no,
and we reviewed.
Drastic Measures. Sorry,
you got it wrong too.
I did, but I remembered you, right away.
I put you on the spot. You got
you
it wrong.
Did.
They made him. Christian Beyer had him put a little like couple pages at the end where Prime Lorca wakes up in a prison cell in the Mirror Universe. Well, we think it's the Mirror Universe. So
yeah,
he's not dead.
Mm,
yeah.
He's alive.
All right.
So,
well, you know,
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure, you know, it makes no sense from the production standpoint to, you know, remove a great actor like Jason Isaacs, a great guy. Do I think Prime Lorca could survive in the Mirror Universe? No. That's just my opinion.
No. What did you think when they... As a fan, obviously, when we got that twist, that mirror, that Lorca was
Not, here's the thing. I knew it was coming. I had read all the scripts. Are you kidding me? Like, Mary's getting scripts. I'm flipping through them.
Sure, get me
to the end, you know? Tell me what happens, babe. Like, I got to know.
Oh, man.
So,
that must have been so hard.
we were flipping out over that whole thing. I mean, we talked about it for weeks and weeks, and it was a big, big deal for us when we found that out.
Well, you know, it's funny because early on I would just absolutely hound Mary for everything and read all the scripts. But actually what I sort of came to realize that I really enjoyed it a lot more watching it without knowing exactly what's coming. So I try to stay away from reading all the scripts, but it doesn't always happen.
But does she watch Star Trek with you? Do you watch it together, or does she not watch herself on the show?
We do. We used to sometimes early on. I think now that it's been going on for so long, and because we're sort of in the house so much, she sort of watches it at her leisure. You know what I mean? So sometimes we watch it together. Sometimes she just will throw it on her phone and check it out. You know, it's very casual. It's a very casual thing, mainly because like. You know, you shoot this show and you know, I really can't stress enough how much everyone on set is just absolutely busting their ass to make the show happen. And then like, you know, 6 months or a year go by and you're like, well, you know what? I actually sort of like, not in terms of like the story or the experience or like the connection with fans, but in terms of like the actual product, like I'm sort of done with my end of the product. And so I don't feel the need to like make it an event because I already sort of put a ton of emotional labor and physical labor into making it happen already.
You know what? I have hogged up so much of your time, and I know that Eric and Charles want to have some equal time, and they have some questions for you. So I'm gonna let Eric jump in here, and he's got some questions to ask you as well. So take it away, Eric.
Yeah, this is awesome, Noah. Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Sure.
And I think what we'll do is we'll just kind of pivot a little bit and kind of go on to what I understand is one of your big hobbies. So can we talk Dungeons and Dragons for a second?
Hell yeah. So of course we can.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
so Yeah, go ahead.
No, please.
Well, I was just going to say, so we sort of understand that that you're pretty into the game, that you are a DM, that in fact, potentially you have been DM maybe for the Discovery cast as well. And so I just really want to know more about that whole situation. Whatever you could tell us, I would be very interested in learning.
Yeah, so, you know, I've been playing not super long, maybe like 6 years now. And I had sort of bandied the idea around of starting up a game during season 3 because I was up in Toronto with Mary then. But then I got cast in the show, and I was like, oh, well, I don't need to do that. But as we're looking forward to season 4, which shot, you know, basically like August to August, more or less, sort of right in the heart of some of the toughest times in the pandemic, especially up in Canada, I was sort of starting to float the idea of starting up a game as a way for me and the cast to have something to do, since it looked like and was true that we wouldn't be able to hang out in person while we were up in Canada because things were so locked down and this is all pre-vaccine. So I sort of floated the idea, and Anthony and Blue just sort of absolutely jumped on it. And it just was like, oh, we are doing this. This is happening. You know, Anthony is such like a mega ultra nerd, and Blue is like super into D&D. So, yeah, so basically, you know, for, I don't know, I think like, you know, about 22 weeks, we played D&D over Zoom. And it was just a really, really fun thing to do. It was a really good momentary placeholder for like in-person meetings. And, you know, I felt like one of the saddest and most challenging things about everybody during the toughest parts of the pandemic was that you weren't getting to kind of create new stories with your friends. You know, in like November, it was like, well, I just can't do another Zoom drinks. I have nothing to say, you know? Things are the same as they were back in June. What do you want from me? So this was like a great way for us to get together and kind of make new stories, you know? Let's beat the bad guy. Let's have this crazy fun experience. And we just had a really, really good time. And everybody was sort of like, what is going on over there? You know, what are these people talking about on set, you know? And it was great. And Anthony then, you know, he would like post out recaps of our sessions on Twitter, and people were sort of starting to follow along and get really into it, which was really fun. And then we sort of like kind of hiatus because the season was coming to an end and vaccines were rolling out and we were able to go outside again. It was like, I don't want to spend another minute in front of Zoom if I don't have to. And it was, you know, it was great. And then, you know, when I got picked up for Star Trek Las Vegas, I pitched the idea of us doing a live D&D session at Star Trek Las Vegas. And, you know, the producers there were like, I don't understand what you're talking about. I have no idea what you're talking about. Like, fine. You know, you got all these people together. Here's some time. Here's like the last time slot we have open. I don't know what you're talking about at all, but like, go for it. And it was super fun. You know, it was an amazing crossover in terms of fans. Like, some people were deep into D&D. We were speaking the same language. We're totally invested in what was going on. And then like, it was like half and half, like the other half of people had no goddamn clue what was happening, but they were having a great time because really the enjoyment of something like that is just getting to watch these actors who you love and whose personality you like and want to get to know better, show more of themselves, show other sides of themselves that you'd have to see, improvise together, joke together, hang out together like you would around a table with a bunch of Doritos and some Mountain Dew, you know? So it's a really fun, unique experience. And we did that in Vegas and we did it in London. And we've like launched a Twitch channel, which is Disco Does D&D on Twitch, to stream some live games as well. And just because it's fun, you know, it's an excuse for us to all play together. It's an excuse for us to interact with a really, really great side of the Star Trek community and the D&D community, and kind of almost like give back to them because they've been so welcoming to us as well. And so I'm really looking forward to getting to play with everybody. I play in Anthony's home game, which is like him and me and his fiance Ken and then some of his friends. But I haven't really had the chance to play with Anthony and Blue and Ian for, you know, since the beginning of 2021 or except at Vegas. So I'm really just really looking forward to that. It should be a lot of fun.
That sounds fantastic. I had no idea that you had a Twitch channel going now.
Yes.
So that's pretty fun.
It's up. Yeah, you can find it on Twitch at Disco Does D&D with, what do you call them? Underscores in between, or we're on Twitter and Instagram at Disco Does D&D.
And it was the three actors who were in your campaign during season four, Anthony, Blue, and Ian?
Yeah, we've got it's me DMing Anthony, Blue, and Ian. Mary was in the original game with us. She's going to be working on a play, so she might come in and guest. And then, you know, Emily Coots was playing with us a lot, so maybe we'll have her come in and guest. And, you know, we want to kind of bring in a mix of Star Trek people who maybe have never played before, but who, you know, have heard us talk about it for a year and are like, all right, I want in. And also kind of like nerd realm people as well. You know, it just kind of expand the circle and bring a lot of people in.
Absolutely. It seems like a good kind of crossover place for that sort of thing to happen. Can I put you on the spot? Do you remember what types of characters these folks played? Because that to me is just like an insight into their psychology, right?
All right. So Mary was, let's see. I'm looking at all their minis. Emily was a half elf or an elf cleric. Blue was a human wizard. Anthony was a half-elf druid. Ian was a elf bard. And Mary was a Goliath barbarian.
Why did I know that you were going to say that?
It was super fun.
I love Ian as the elf bard, too. That's fantastic.
Yes, yes. They absolutely committed to the bit too. They were awesome.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, I'm going to have to check out the Twitch channel for sure.
Yeah, our first stream is Sunday at 4 Eastern time. So come hang out with us.
Just in time. So have you, since you're such D&D fans, have you played the Star Trek Adventures?
You know, I haven't. So we get asked about this a lot. I think like for Anthony's like, I don't really want to play Star Trek Adventures. Sure. I live Star Trek Adventures. You know what I mean?
It's his job, right? So, yeah.
For me, I'm like waiting for the right moment because I feel like I almost, when I was in London, there was like a Star Trek Adventures table with someone from Modiphius there, and they were super nice and have sent me all the books, but my schedule was so packed, I couldn't get over there. So I'm waiting for like a very official moment to sit down and like really play Star Trek Adventures. I don't feel like it's something I could do casually. Not in the sense that I couldn't enjoy it casually, but like if I'm going to do it, like I really need to, it really needs to be done properly, if you know what I mean. So it's very much on my radar, and it's truly only a matter of time before, you know, I'm playing that game as well.
That makes a lot of sense. I'll tell you that I have a lot of fun. We put an over text game on Discord.
Amazing.
And it turns out that's not a bad way to do it. It's like the old days. You know,
people love it. You know, everyone I've talked to has really, really fond feelings about that game.
Well, for a good friend Nathan, who often calls into the podcast, but we don't have on tonight, I need to ask you one other D&D question before we move on. Which version do you guys play?
We play 5.5e, although they're moving to 5.5, so we're going to have to transition to 5.5 shortly.
Right on. I do not know what that means, but it's important.
Good.
To Mason, so
whoever needs to know the answer at least knows that I'm paying attention. They're like, why aren't you playing 3.5? I'm not playing 3.5, all right? I'm not playing Pathfinder. I do know about Starfinder. I think it's cool. It's a lot to learn. I'm well-versed, but I have I'm not super smart, so I can't really hold too many game systems in my head at once.
that is a completely reasonable response to that. You know, I can barely hold one, and I'm not even running it. So
exactly, yeah. Exactly.
All right. Well, I want to get you on to Charles. I just have two quick Andorian questions before
yes.
I pass you along. So
yes.
First of all, one statement: anything's better than a TNG Andorian. So at least you don't like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean that's truly a classic. That might be my favorite Andorian of all time. Truly amazing.
Every time I see one, it warms my heart just a little bit.
It's a beautiful thing.
It's a beautiful thing. And then lastly, did you get to keep any like cool Rin stuff, like a face or a...
I have the... When they take off the mask, they have to cut it off. It's not like it slides on and off. It's like almost like a cast, like you have to cut off a cast. So I have a section of my head which has my cutoff antenna and like my eyebrows, basically.
Okay. So you do have a little bit of something.
It's in
there,
a bag in my closet.
It's in a bag in your closet.
Yeah.
Shouldn't it be in a frame, man? Come on.
It probably should, but it's kind of weird. You know, it's kind of weird. It's like framing a bandage or something like that. It probably
right.
stinks.
Or a horrible burn victim. Well,
exactly.
That was awesome. I love talking about D&D with you there. I'm going to pass you along to Charles. Thank you very much for coming on. It's been a blast.
Yeah, man.
Well, there's not a whole lot I can bring up that you guys haven't brought up already. I've actually been having a lot of fun with role playing myself. Our friend Nate, we were playing a miniatures game called Shadows of Brimstone, which led to a role playing game of a series called Deadlands, which is an old Wild West with a lot of it, big changes.
Is that like a Cthulhu style Wild West game?
There is a little bit of Cthulhu type thing. We did get some undead in there.
Sure.
And some unknown type characters, a little bit of that type thing. And now we're having a bit of fun because we just started a brand new game and we're doing Mass Effect.
Oh, nice. Very cool.
So we're having some fun with that one.
Very cool.
So we have a ball. I will throw out one question. I can't think of her name right now. Michael Burnham.
Is Sinequa?
Sinequa. I hear Sinequa just is the lead of the crew, where she's kind of the big motivator. And I've heard about the game session she brought people over when it started, and I just would love to hear a story about her.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, Sinequa is just really incredible because, you know, she's the lead of the show. She's an executive producer, and she really sets the tone for a show. You know, I think a lot of the fans have commented how well the Discovery cast gets along, how they all really seem really close and friendly, and we're always joking with each other, and it just seems like everyone feels relaxed around each other. Everyone behaves in a way that makes everyone feel comfortable. And, you know, I think a lot of that has to do with an incredible group of people who have been assembled, but I think that real sense of camaraderie does come from the top down and come from the example that Sinequa sets. You know, she's so genuine and warm and caring and thoughtful and really works. You know, I think she really considers being the lead of the show, setting an example, setting a precedent for how to behave and how to treat other people. She takes that seriously as part of her job. And I think actually the best example of this is that my last day of shooting was the day that I got blasted. So it was like, it was all done. You know, it was very much the final day of shooting. And as I was shooting, you know, it was a pretty big scene. You know, you had Ken was there and Janet was there and a bunch of extras and David was there. But then I was sort of walking around set in between and like, Doug was there out of costume. which was kind of weird because, like, you know, he wasn't in scene. He was just, like, in the room. And I was like, it was just, it was cool. It was great. You know, I love Doug and we were hanging out, but it was like Doug was there. And then, like, Anthony showed up out of costume. And I was just like, oh, I don't really understand what's going on, but, like, that's cool. Like, let me just, you know, go finish the scene. So I finished the scene and they, you know, at the end of, whenever somebody's last scene of their last day is, they do what's called a clap out, where you kind of just applaud somebody when they're done. And so they started my clap out to finish up, and Sonequa sort of like pushed through the crowd, knowing, you know, how important Star Trek is to me and my family and how much this moment has meant to me. And she, I actually think Mary gave it to me, but it was sort of via Sonequa, gave me a poster, which was essentially like my costume mock-up. So it was like a big, you know, big poster of me in my my costume that like Gersha might use to like work on the costume. And it was signed by the whole cast, the whole crew, Jonathan Frakes' signature, big in the middle. And everybody was on set there to congratulate me. You know, people came out of their way on their day off to come and congratulate me, to come send me off, because I had been around so much and because they all knew me and mainly because Sonequa made it happen. So that is really just like indicative of the kind of person that she is. And that sort of thoughtfulness and kindness really just extends to everybody on the set, whether it's the actors or the crew or, you know, anybody else who's working there, I think would share that sentiment.
Yeah, I got that idea from Star Trek Las Vegas in 19.
Mm-hmm.
There were just constant praises of Sonequa.
Yeah.
From
yeah.
all the crew, that they just all talked about how she just formed that connection with everybody. And I think that made kind of what Next Generation did, but I think a lot earlier than Next Generation. They built that connection a lot earlier than Next Generation did.
Yeah, she's just the real deal, man. You know, she's just awesome. Really, really awesome and really lucky to get to know her, you know?
Yeah. I don't know if you got a chance to work with Mary Wise at all. She's a real fun character. She's a real fun person at conventions, too.
Indeed.
I will pass it back over to our host.
Well, I wanted to see Shannon. Are you still on the line?
Yes, I'm still here.
Did you have anything else you wanted to say to Noah? Or any other questions?
Well, it wasn't a question. I'm sorry that you're not coming back. So, well, I guess there is one question. Could you do a different character? I mean, it won't be as cool as Rin.
Yes, nothing will be as cool. You know, obviously, if they ask me back, I will definitely come back. It's really challenging because they shoot in Canada. There's all these like difficult union rules. You can only use a certain amount of American actors and you have to use a certain amount of Canadian actors. So it's not, and there's so few episodes that there's not very many parts to go around. So it's not like in the old days where you're doing 26 episodes and you're desperate for somebody who you can trust to nail an important role. And you're just like, you know, we got to get somebody in here. It's much more challenging to repeat roles just from the setup. But obviously, if they asked me back, I would do whatever they asked me to do.
Because you're a fan, too. Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, Noah, I just want to say thank you so much for hanging out and Trek talking with us tonight. It was a blast to have you on.
Yeah, big time.
Yeah.
Well,
my
pleasure,
you
guys. Thank you for having me. I appreciate you having me on.
And I just wanted to say we talk about Discovery every week. And I just wanted you to pass along to your awesome, lovely wife how much we love her and how much we miss her on the show, because we've said this on the podcast so many times that the character of Tilly is kind of like us. You know, when we watch Star Trek, we see a lot of us in Tilly. Like, if I was on the show, I would be Tilly.
I love that, man.
You know, we relate to her character, and it's like we're being seen on the show as a fan, you know, We all look at Tilly as us. And we really miss her. And we really wish her all the best. And if you could just let her know how much we miss her and how much we love her, that would be, I would really appreciate that. Because
I will. I'll definitely tell her. I'll definitely tell her. That means the world. I love that, man.
Yeah,
she
is awesome.
Let her know that we love the novel.
Oh, yeah, you know.
One of our favorite novels
is the
Tilly novel.
I started reading that novel, and I loved it. I think Una did an amazing job on that one. I haven't finished it yet, but I got like two-thirds of the way through. It's really good.
It is.
Yeah,
it is.
People
come up to her and be like, "That novel is one of my favorite." I'm not surprised. So I'll let her know all of that.
And I have a question from somebody that texted me that's listening and wanted to know what did you think about Captain Killy? Which version of Killy did you prefer? Captain Killy in the leather with the straight hair, or Tilly as she appears on Discovery?
Well, here's what I'll say. I love them both very much, but the Mary Wiseman I know and love is much closer in spirit to Captain Killy than she is to Tilly. So I'll just leave it at that.
That's fair. That's fair. We can take that. We can run with that. Well, anyway, I just wanted to get that in before we let you go, because you're like our direct link to Mary, as close as we'll ever get. So pass that along. How we feel about her and how much we miss her. And we wish her all the best of luck at Starfleet Academy, whipping all those cadets into shape.
Hell yeah. Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. I'll let her know.
So thank you so much for coming on the show, Noah. We really appreciate it. Thank you
so
much.
You guys. Bye-bye.
All right. Good night. All right, guys. That was Mr. Rin himself, or Mr. Killy. We're going to take another quick commercial break, but the show's not over yet. Oh, no. We still have some Star Trek news, not a lot. We still have Star Trek birthdays to go through. We still have some fan shout-outs, and we're going to talk about last week's episode of Star Trek Prodigy, the Legends episode. So you want to stay tuned. Don't touch that dial. Run to the microwave. Run to the bathroom, but come right back because we're not done yet.
Trek Talking, all things Star Trek and beyond. Thursday night, 7:30 to 9:30, all hailing frequencies are open. iTunes, iHeart, Stitcher, Spotify, Amazon, and wherever fine podcasts are found. Trek Talking, boldly going wherever your mind is willing to go.
And we're back. So we just talked to Noah Averbatch Katz, who plays Rin on Star Trek Discovery, also known as Mr. Tilly, and it was a blast. But we're going to be moving on now. We're going to continue our normally scheduled programming. So that means we're going to be doing our fan shout-outs. And Eric, why don't you get us started?
Yeah, you better believe it. Our very first fan shout-out this week goes to Christina Kapp from Germany. That's right there in Berlin, capital city. So, Christina, thank you so much for listening to us from the middle of Europe right there. We're also saying hello and sending out a big shout-out to Munther Alaskri from Baghdad, Iraq. I can't remember the last person we had check in from Iraq. So, Munther Alaskri, thank you for listening from Baghdad. And we're also saying, finally, on my list, a big hello and thank you to top fan Gord Thorne, who's in Sydney, but not that one, Nova Scotia, Canada. That's right. There's a Sydney up there, too. And top fan status means that Gord interacts with us quite a bit on our Facebook page. So thank you very much, Gord Thorne, for listening to us all the way from across the northern border. Charles, who is on your list this week?
Well, let's talk about top fan who is from that other part of the country, Rossi Scott from Brisbane, Australia. Kristen Wickstrom is from Austin, Texas. And Crystal Alberny is from Kansas. Jim, what about you?
Well, we'd like to say hello and thank you to Neil Hickey from Dublin, Ireland. My grandfather is from Ireland. And Lewis Alexander from Maryland, right here in the U.S. of A. And last but not least, Dale Lewis, who's from Southern Oregon. Interesting. Wonder if you've ever bumped into Dale. Eric?
I don't know. Southern Oregon is quite a ways away, but Dale, we are all Oregonians, so thank you very much for listening to us. Perhaps we've met. I've been down to Medford. I've been down to Roseburg. I've been down the way, so maybe.
You never know. And now it's time for our Star Trek birthdays.
That was not a Klingon song.
No, it was not. And Grumpy Worf says that every week. So we always start off our show, our birthdays, with remembrances of those who are no longer with us. And for that, we turn to Eric. Take it away, Eric.
Yeah, our very first remembrance this week goes out to writer-producer Gene L. Kuhn from the TOS period. Gene was around for a very long time, very integral to the beginnings of TOS, had very close relationships with everybody around there. Eventually kind of ran into a dispute with Roddenberry, and he sort of left and then came back and wrote some more under a pseudonym of Lee Cronin. So someone who's very deeply ingrained in Star Trek, the lexicon of Star Trek. So Gene L. Kuhn would have had a birthday this week. Happy birthday to Gene. We're also saying happy birthday and sending our remembrances out to somebody who I personally feel a connection with, though I never got to meet him, Stephen Hawking. That's right, Stephen Hawking, the only person to ever actually play himself on Star Trek, of course, was in TNG's episode Descent Part 1, that famous poker game right at the beginning there with Newton and Einstein and Hawking and all those guys. What a great scene. What a amazing person. Physicist, just like all, I mean, everybody knows who Stephen Hawking is. I don't have to say too much about him. But it's cool to be able to count him among those who are in our Star Trek family. So happy birthday and remembrances to Stephen Hawking. We're also saying happy birthday and sending out our love to Jane Ross. Actress Jane Ross played the character of Tamoon in TOS's episode, The Gangsters of Triskelion. She's the sort of greenish, mustard-colored, pink-clad alien from that episode with the deep voice, who, of course, is a very integral part of that episode. And actually, a little bit of trivia. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but in 2381, a framed photograph of her and a couple of other characters was among several others that were displayed on the walls of a bar in Starbase 25 on the Lower Decks episode, An Embarrassment of Duplers. So she not only appeared on TOS, but she appeared in cartoon form on a poster in Lower Decks, which is kind of cool. So happy birthday to Jane Ross. Yeah. Also happy birthday to actress Angela Patton, who played the character of Aunt Ada in Voyager's Caretaker, that very beginning episode. And if you've seen that episode, you know exactly who that character is. So happy birthday to Angela. And we're also saying happy birthday and sending out our love and remembrances to actor Felix Sia. He played one of the Talosians in TOS's The Cage, a very short of stature one. In fact, Sia was only 3'11" and was famous for a lot of different roles, not only being a Talosian, but being in several other shows throughout his life. I know Jim's got one he wants to check in about. I'm going to say that I also knew this actor from the old Addams Family show from the 60s. He actually played Cousin It on that show. And Jim, where do you know Felix from?
Well, if you guys saw a little movie that came out in 1983 called Return of the Jedi, he was the hang gliding Ewok. Yep. But if you grew up in the 70s watching television, then you probably know this character who played Buck Rogers. He was Tweaky. And I actually had an opportunity to meet him at Rhode Island Comic Con. Well, COVID's got me all screwed up. The last time we were allowed to go out in public, what, 3 years ago, 4 years ago?
Yeah,
I don't know.
Like that.
I have a Buck Rogers poster that was signed by him, by Buck, and by Colonel Deering. All three of them were there, and I grew up watching them on TV every week, so I was really excited to get all three of them to sign my Buck Rogers poster. So he was a really nice guy, and we miss him.
That is very, very cool. And, yeah, we just lost him last April, so it was not that long ago. So happy birthday and remembrances to Felix. And now moving on to the folks who are still with us, who have birthdays this week. Charles, who do you have?
Oh, I rearranged my list a little bit to get them in a little better order. Catherine Collin played Aza in DS9's Rival. And then the rest of my list is kind of a fun list. Hallie Todd played Lal in TNG's Offspring. I'm sure we all remember Data's daughter. In fact,
great
episode. Kind of almost questioned about Data's daughter with Picard.
Mm-hmm.
So even that one episode that she still brought up. Mark Alan Shepard played Morn in DS9.
You know, it's so hard to get a word in edgewise. Whatever Morn is in a scene, he just never shuts up. He's constantly talking. It's amazing.
Some of my favorite DS9 scenes are the one where he's sitting there not saying anything and Quark is talking to him and Quark convinces himself of something and Morn never says a word.
Yep.
And
he's
a
great character.
We got a bit of a tie-in with the next character because we all know who Morn really was. He represented what character?
Norm.
From a famous TV show? Norm.
Cheers.
From
Cheers. And, of course, who do we have next? Christy Alley, who played Savick in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, which we know better from her time in Cheers.
Yep.
Yep.
So that's a fun way to
Rebecca.
Find that one together.
Yeah, that's kind of cool that they both have a birthday
one,
this week.
The last one, I'm rather surprised Jim gave this one to me as a very happy birthday today to Una McCormick, one of our favorite authors. In fact, we just talked to our guest about The Way to the Stars, the Tilly book. We've also got Wonderland, the time Michael spent with season 3 between episode 1 and 2. And then, of course, also the
Captain Janeway.
Yes, she
has Captain
ended, yep.
Janeway novel.
That's right.
With Janeway.
And she has a new Discovery novel coming out, too.
Yes, I was just trying to remember the name of it, but I know it's coming out, I think, within a month or two. It's coming out pretty soon.
Yeah.
And I will tell you that she was just one of my favorite guests that we've ever had. She came on the podcast and talked about Wonderlands. She made the time to do it at a very weird hour because, of course, she's in Great Britain. And the time change was pretty significant. And somehow, for most of the time, we were able to cut through transatlantic interference and actually get her on the podcast. And she was just a joy to talk to. You can tell she really lives and breathes these characters when she's writing about them. And just the way she would talk about Tilly just came through in what we read in the book. It was amazing.
She was awesome. Yeah. Absolutely.
Definitely. Okay, Jim, how about your side?
Well, I've got a few here. I would like to say happy birthday to Jonathan Farwell, who played Captain Walker Keel in the TNG episode conspiracy. And for you guys that don't remember, he's the guy that introduced Jack Crusher to Beverly Crusher. So happy birthday to Jonathan. We'd also like to say happy birthday to Stan Ivar, who played Mark Johnson in the Voyager of Caretaker and Persistence of Vision. He was Mr. Janeway. He would have been Mr. Janeway. If you read the Janeway autobiography that Una McCormick wrote, you would have found out that they were going to be married. As it is, he's only seen on the video screen talking to Captain Janeway, but he would have been Mr. Janeway. So happy birthday to Stan Ivar.
The book does a great job of fleshing out how much he meant to Janeway, and it's something that the show kind of touched on just a little tiny bit, but the book does a great job of really kind of digging into Janeway's heart just a little bit about him too. So highly recommend it.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Yep. And the next one, we'd like to say happy birthday to Michelle Forbes, who played Ensign Rolaren on TNG, 8 episodes she appeared on, so I'm not going to list all of them. But she also appeared as Dara on the TNG episode Half a Life, which is the one where La Loxana comes back and falls in love with the dude from MASH, whose name escapes me right now.
Yes. With the spots on his forehead. Yeah.
And at the age of 60, they commit suicide. And Loxana Troy talks him out of it. Yeah, that's it. Yep. And Loxana Troy talks him out of it because he's on the verge of this great discovery. And Michelle Forbes is his daughter who wants him to commit suicide. And then, of course, at the end, that's exactly what he does. It's a really great episode. And it gives Majel an opportunity to show her acting chops. And that's a really good episode. But she's also, I believe that Eric probably knows her the best as Admiral Kane from Battlestar Galactica Razor. She was a badass. She was nothing like Commander Kane from the original Battlestar, I'll tell you that much.
Well, they could not have found a better actress to play that part, I will say. She was very convincing.
Yeah, she was, absolutely. She also was on one of my wife's favorite shows, True Blood, as Marion Forrester, and which is pretty cool. And she was also Lieutenant Brazen in Escape from L.A., Escape from New York, one of my favorite movies. Escape from L.A., not quite so much. Anyways, happy birthday.
It's got Kurt Russell.
Yeah, that it did. I would also like to say happy birthday to Rachel Harris, who played Maris in the Voyager episode Before and After. She was Kes's mother. I must have missed that episode because I thought they only lived 7 years. So how did we get to meet Kes's mother? It must have been a flashback.
When Kes went backwards in their timeline.
Flashback.
That's right.
Oh, okay. That must be.
Is it time?
I must have missed that one. I'll have to go back and check it out.
You know,
I always do the
flashback or time travel.
Or time travel, right? I always do the Klingons, obviously, unless they're no longer with us, in which case Eric does them. And I always do the Klingons last because I love Klingons. So we like to say, I can't how they say it in Klingon, but it's not a Klingon song. So I'm just going to say kapla to Charlie Brill. And Charlie Brill played Aaron Darwin in TOS's episode The Trouble with Tribble. But I think his better version of that character was on DS9 Trials and Tribulations. He just played that character just so awesome. And, so happy birthday to Charlie Brill. You guys remember that episode, right?
Oh, heck yeah. The Klingon who's not a Klingon. Yeah.
Yeah. And he was going to have a statue of him holding a Tribble in one hand and Kirk's head in the other.
That's right. Yep.
It was a great episode. And that's the episode where they're at the bar and they're like, those are Klingons. And they're like, Klingons, where? Where's the Klingons? Where's the Klingons? And Worf's like, we don't talk about it.
Yep.
It's a great scene. I wish they had left it like that.
Well, I gotta go with Noah on this. I mean, I actually personally think that's one of the cool things that Enterprise did right was they tried to retcon it, man. And it's kind of a believable story. You know, this is, at least it gives us a reason for it.
It is. So, guys, we we don't have a lot of Star Trek news, as I said, because I wanted to leave as much time for us to talk to Noah and for you guys to call in. Anyways, 646-668-2433 is the number if you want to call and talk to us about Prodigy, which we're going to talk about next. So we do have one interesting bit of news that I thought was important enough to get into this week's episode. So we're going to do Star Trek news.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Incoming transmission.
Enter authorization code. Command codes verified. Define parameters of program. Level 9 authorization required. Specify parameters. Transfer of data is complete.
All right, we only have one story this week, and I gave it to Eric. So, Eric, what's going on in the world of Star Trek this week?
Well, we have a little ray of hope as some of us sort of descend into the slight depression of the Omicron haze here. Never fear, Star Trek Picard has returned to production following a COVID pause. That's right. Apparently, the old adage that the show must go on is in full force for the team behind Star Trek Picard, who returned to work after a short hiatus due to a COVID outbreak. Star Trek Picard paused on Monday after over 50 members of the production, which employs around 450 people in total, you can do the math, tested positive for COVID-19. While the report said some casts were included in the 50-plus case, that did not include star Sir Patrick Stewart. Yay. And as it turns out, the pause has already come to an end. A production restarted on Friday. Production on the third season of Picard began in early September 2021, immediately after production on the second season wrapped. The second season was originally slated to debut on Paramount Plus this coming February, but with the decision to have Discovery take a five-week hiatus to return for the second half of its season on February 10th, it's reasonable to assume that Picard Season 2 will probably be pushed back a few weeks. And we've kind of talked about this, how they're likely to kind of run one show at a time. But for me, that's really, really good news. 50 out of 450 was, 9% of the population of the show was testing positive for COVID. So the fact that they were able to isolate those people, probably test everybody else and get the show back on the road, is fortunate, and I am super happy that we got this little bit of good news today, because I was a little bit worried that that might become a thing, and particularly with somebody like Sir Patrick Stewart. I mean, I'm assuming he is vaccinated, but he's not getting any younger, so that's somebody you really don't want to get sick.
Yeah, and I just thought it would be important to let the fans know, everybody know, that Picard is back in filming, and because last week we reported that it wasn't, I saw this story and I just thought it was important enough to try to squeeze it in here. So that's what we did. We squeezed it in. So that's our news. That wraps up our news. And now we're going to talk about Star Trek Prodigy. We're going to be talking about last week's episode because we're a week behind. We are going, I would like to try to get caught up and do two episodes at one time so that when we'll be back on track when Discovery comes back. But I'll talk to Eric and Charles about that, and we'll make that happen. But at any rate, we're going to be talking about Star Trek Prodigy, last week's episode, Kobayashi. So before we go, though, I have to do this. Maybe. What's wrong here? I hate it when technology doesn't work. Let's try this
Red
again.
Alert! Suffice to say, full black alert, y'all. We are about to make the jump to some serious spoiler territory. Red alert! Suffice to say, full spoilers follow from here on out. So if you haven't watched the episode yet, definitely go check that out first before you watch.
You know, technology is great, especially when we're live.
Yeah. Well, that's good. We had a red alert and a black alert. We're ready now.
That's right.
Yeah, we got them both back to back. Go figure. Anyways, so guys, we have a caller on the line. Before Woo-hoo. We dive into Prodigy, let's see. Hey, good evening. Thanks for calling Trek Talk. And what's your name and where are you calling us from tonight?
It's Nate calling in from Vegas. Better late
it's
than
Nate
never.
Nate from Vegas. What's happening, buddy? Hey, Eric asked Noah ask Noah your questions, and I asked him about Captain Killy and Captain Tilly. So, and his answer was, he said that the Mary that he knows is closer to Captain Killy. So take that for what it's worth. So we're going to be talking about Star Trek prodigy Kobayashi. And every week I put up on our Facebook page a questionnaire, and I ask you guys, the fans, to tell us what you thought about the episode. And then we'll talk about it and see how close we are to what you guys said. So, Eric, what did our Facebook fans have to say about last week's episode, Kobayashi?
Well, Lisa Hayes says 10, loved it. Ellen Smock says an 8, I really enjoyed it. Max Antani says 8, fun, nostalgic, educational. Wes Huntington gave it a 10, exclamation point. Tate August Holwick gave it a 10. Top fan Lauren Steele gave it a 7. Dal learns something about leadership. Gwyn finds her purpose. David Simons gave it a 7.5. Says, I suspect, like a lot of others, I spent a lot of the episode trying to place the quotes to the original stories. And we'll talk a little bit about that later on. So, David, I was doing the same thing. Rob Garnett says, an 8. Great episode. Nathan Kornhoff, who's this guy? He says,
yeah, I never heard of this guy.
He says, I give this
he's
one
a lot to say.
He's got a lot to say, so we cut it down a little bit so he can do it in person. So
present Nathan agrees with past Nathan. Past Nathan says, I give this one a 3, and that's only because of my following positives. My positives, I enjoyed that it was an in memoriam episode. It was nice to see legacy characters and the Kobayashi Maru scenario again. Chakotay's cliffhanger appearance was also a plus for me. So thanks, Nathan. We'll talk more about that in a little bit. Top fan Benjamin Samuel Goldschmidt said, I loved it. A 9.5, not perfect, but pretty darn close. And so averaging out our scores for this week, we have a fan score of 8.1 for this episode. And in the past, we did a poor job of keeping track of previous Prodigy episodes, but now we're keeping track. So this one holds both the top spot and the bottom spot of our fan scores at the moment, because it's the only episode that we've fan scored. But 8.1 is pretty
good. I started keeping track of that on our show notes now. And then I figured we'd go back at the end of the season, and we'll do like a season and ending type show for Discovery and Prodigy and all the other shows. And we can go back and take a look at how the fans rated each episode and go through them in order. So that's why I started keeping track of that. I should have been doing that all along, but I don't know why I didn't. But
that's all right. We got it for Discovery that goes all the way back, and we've got all the movies and everything, which is always fun to go back and talk about. So.
And we still have one movie left to do, though. We have to do Star Trek Into Darkness at some point. We got to squeeze that in somewhere so we can have all the movies. And then we can do a special show where we can go through all the movies, how the fans rated them.
Mm-hmm.
And
Into Darkness,
you know,
or Star Trek Beyond?
No, Star Trek Into Darkness.
Beyond. Yep.
Yep.
So we still need to do Beyond also then.
Well, we did them out of order.
Yeah, we did them out of order. Yeah.
All right.
I like to go back because for me, we're fans and it's all about the fans. And so I want to include as much of what the fans' input is as ours. So I think it's really interesting and fun to go back and see what the fans thought about it, and then to see what we thought about it and see how close or how far apart we are from the fans. I just think that's cool. So we'll do a movie special where we'll go back and revisit all the movies, and we'll list them at how the fans scored them and compare that to how we would score them. Just have some fun. We'll do that with Prodigy. We'll do that with Discovery. We'll do that with all the shows as they go along. So anyways, guys, we're going to talk about Star Trek Prodigy Kobayashi. This was a really good one. There was a lot going on in this one. I only have two clips to play for you guys, but they're two great ones, I think. Two fun ones. And we're going to dive right into this episode and really, really dissect it. And we actually have Nathan with us, and he can continue with his review of the episode. It was a rather long one. I chopped it down. we'll hear his full analysis of the episode when we come back. So don't touch that dial. Don't go away. Run to the bathroom. Run to the microwave. Grab your chicken wings. Grab your your egg rolls, your pizza, whatever, and come right back. Hang out with us because we're not done yet. We've already talked to Noah, which was a blast. And we're going to talk about Star Trek Prodigy. So don't touch that dial. We're going to be right back after this very quick, very awesome message from our very own Sub-Commander Charles.
Hi, this is Sub-Commander Charles from Trek Talking, here to invite you to join us for the best science fiction-themed podcast on the Internet. Our elite team of Trek-sperts are here to discuss Star Trek and related science fiction content. And we want to hear from you. Dial 646-668-2433 Thursday nights from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Coast Time, and we'll get you on the air to share your opinion. Or you can also find us on Facebook. We have faith that you will call.
And we're back.
Jim, can I just say I love Charles's commercial because it's the only commercial that we have that says West Coast Time. Yay, Charles!
Yeah, I
want to
make sure I did West Coast.
That's right, yep. Represent.
That's right. Yeah, absolutely.
We're the West Coast.
Sorry, didn't mean to interrupt, but I just wanted to acknowledge that.
No, we're global. We're global, baby. You know, we're
right.
Like you said, we talked to Una, and she was over in the UK. I don't even know what time it was over there.
It was like 8 hours ahead of me, so 5 hours ahead of you.
Yeah, so. You know, we're all over the place, and that's cool.
We called her about 11, 12 o'clock. We probably called her about mid-evening.
Yep. Yep. She. I remember she said that her daughter was, like, getting ready for bed.
Yep. That was a Saturday. That was a Saturday afternoon because I remember I did the show from camp.
And I remember I was in New York, and I was walking around outside at a library to get an internet signal.
Yep. But, you know, these are the things we do to accommodate our guests, you know?
That's right.
Yep. So we're going to talk about Kobayashi, which in this particular episode, briefly if you haven't seen it, of course, we have the crew of the Prodigy, Dahl. That's the name I'm looking for. Dahl and his crew. And he's a self-appointed captain. And this episode pretty much evolves around him taking the Kobayashi Maru, basically, in a nutshell. And he goes on the holodeck with Jake Unpack and decides, this is a piece of cake. I'm going to take the Kobayashi Maru. Well, we all know about the Kobayashi Maru, and it ain't quite a piece of cake like he thought it was going to be. But what makes this episode stand out and so special, in my case, and obviously Nathan agreed with me too, and I think you guys might as well, is this. I'm going to play this clip for you guys right here, right now. You knew we couldn't do this show without this clip, and I'm calling this clip the best crew.
What about this J.T. Kirk guy?
I'm pretty sure we already have a captain on board. Computer, just give me some of the best you got.
Acknowledged. Populating crew. Communications officer, Uhura.
All deck standing by, sir.
Chief medical officer, Beverly Crusher.
Looks like you could use some help, Captain.
Chief of security, Odo. And science officer, Spock.
Request permission to come aboard.
I like this guy. You should take notes, Jenkum.
Permission granted.
This is gonna be easy.
What's the sitch here?
Outpost 2 coming into sensor range, Captain. Have a blip on the motion sensor, Captain.
Captain, I'm getting something on the distress channel.
Now we're talking. Put her through.
Imperative, this is the Kobayashi Maru. We have struck a Bravitic mine and have lost all power.
What a bunch of whiners.
Sir. That ship is located in Gamma Hydra Section 10.
The neutral zone.
Okay. What's the big deal?
Look, the neutral zone is all that separates the Federation from the Klingons. No one is allowed in.
Entry into which by either side would constitute an act of war.
I'm leaving 87 lives, Captain. Shields failing, hull breach imminent. They're running out of time.
Quick show of hands. Does anyone know these people?
Excuse me. What does it matter?
So nobody then.
Okay, this one's easy. Reverse course and warp us out of here.
You heard the cap. Back it up.
Not acceptable. Their very lives hang on what we do.
Or on what this vessel fails to do.
All good points.
Everybody, calm down. I'm in command, so I'm allowed to.
I don't care whether it's the law or not. I will not do it.
You can order me all you want. As of now, I'm resigning my commission.
Ooh, let's do that. Yes, mutiny. Yes, mutiny. Mutiny. Mutiny.
No. Jeez, everybody cool it. Fine. Change course for the neutral zone.
That's not good enough. May very well start a war.
But you just told me to go in there.
We have two Klingon ships closing after us, bearing 136 Mark IV.
What the... Where'd they come from?
Battle stations. All hands, battle stations.
We are surrounded. Photon torpedoes locking on target.
Simulation complete.
Simulation. Right.
Oh, don't take them pognew the whole time.
Captain assessment score, 3%. Leadership, 2%. Judgment, 0.1%.
Oh, come on.
Jankum Pog is going to blast this out to the others.
So my crew never respects me again? No, I can do this. Boot it back up.
So there's one other legacy character that shows up in this clip that I didn't want to play the whole episode, but we also see Scotty. And Scotty shows up in his monster maroon that we see him wearing in the Star Trek movies. And that was the other legacy character that shows up in this episode, as well as the ones we already saw. So you know what? We already heard from Nathan. So why don't we start it off with Nathan? Because I cut his explanation a little bit short because it was very long. So Nate, you gave this episode a 3. So why don't you start us off?
All right. Well, I just want to point out that in that clip right there, the computer had it spot on. He has the computer said all those low numbers for that character, and that is spot on for that character. Speaking of that character, he is one of my negatives because I can't stand him, and I've stated that before. And I promised you, although I hadn't seen this episode before I promised you last week that I'd bring the negative Nancy. So they forced me to do it by focusing this entire episode, for the most part, on what I believe is the worst character in the series. So he is by far my least favorite character, and dragged the whole episode down for me. I pointed out in my review on your Facebook page that I got a very Boimler versus the Borg holodeck experience from it, which this is basically a rehash of. I didn't appreciate that. And I would have liked to have seen, because they pointed out where the rest of the crew approached him earlier in the episode, basically told him that they unanimously, except for him, came to the decision to go to the Federation, and that he basically, they pointed out to him that he basically self-appointed himself captain. So I think this episode would have gone a little bit better for me if any of the other kids that wanted to be captain also went through the test, instead of focusing the whole episode on him. Let's see here. And then the other problem I had, we just heard all the used audio clips. To me, this is a professional company. Viacom CBS is involved with this. They have money. They should have been able to clean up those clips. They sounded too choppy to me, and you could hear a lot of background from the episodes that they took them from, and I didn't, like Eric said, he tried to, or he briefly said that he tried to pick up what episodes that they came from. They could have spent a little bit of their big bucks to clean up those audio clips to make them sound a little bit better and fitting the dialogue a little bit better for the story that they were trying to portray. But again, you had already said my positives is the fact that this is a in memoriam episode, so I did appreciate all of the past actors, the actors that had passed away. Obviously, Nichelle Nichols has not passed away, thankfully, yet, but they brought her back in. And then, I don't know, with Gates McFadden reprising her role, when she first spoke, and you could hear it in that clip that you just played, it didn't sound like Gates to me. It almost sounded like Kate Mulgrew playing the part at first. So I don't know if it was because she wasn't used to voice acting. As she played through the episode, it began to sound a lot more like her. But at first, I thought it was Kate Mulgrew playing Gates' part in there. So
that might have been like an age thing, Nathan. I was wondering if, you know, we haven't heard Gates McFadden as Beverly Crusher in, you know, 20, 30 years. So I was wondering, I noticed that too, right when she first started speaking, the one she got into a groove. But I was wondering if that was just the difference in, you know, hearing her this many years later.
And, you know, Nate, I was wondering, I thought it was just me. When I was watching the episode, I watched it twice. When I was watching the episode, when they played the clips, particularly from Spock, they did, the audio level and quality did not match the rest of the audio in the episode. You could clearly hear where it was chopped out. And you could clearly hear background noise from the episode that could have been cleaned up. And they did the same thing with Odo. And, you know, all the clips that they played were very sloppy and not done very well. You could clearly tell that they were edited clips, and the quality did not match the high definition quality audio that we're hearing on the rest of the show. And that stuck out like a sore thumb, at least when I was watching it. It did. I don't know if you guys had that happen or not, but on my surround sound, it popped right out at me like, boom, you know, that's a clip. Boom, that's a clip. Boom, that's a clip. And I agree with you, Nate. They could have cleaned that up and matched that with the rest of the episode so it wasn't so glaring. I did have that problem, too. I don't know if anyone else did.
Yeah. No, I mean, we all heard the same thing. I totally agree with that. I feel like they do have plenty of money. They should have been able to at least level those things out, compress them, do, you know, there's lots of little tricks you can play with audio, and that's all digitized now, so you can just use a computer to do it. I also kind of half agree with what Nate was saying about it being a little bit of a rehash of the Boimler Lower Decks episode. I mean, it's the same type of thing where he's trying to test himself over and over again. And then in the end, you know, the way he defeats the Kobayashi Maru, spoiler alert, is he uses pretty much the same technique that that Kelvin Kirk uses during Star Trek Beyond with the Beastie Boys thing, where he just like blares it really loud and that somehow distracts everybody and makes the scenario winnable. So if you take those three things out of it, I really liked this episode. Oh, also, Nate once upon a time said that Jankum Pog was somebody he didn't really care for, and I believe your exact words were something like, that's no Tellarite. And I have to say that I'm agreeing more and more with that. He doesn't speak like a Tellarite. He's not grumpy enough. He refers to himself in the third person all the time. He's quickly becoming, I don't mind Dahl at all. I actually kind of like him because I think he's learning and becoming a better character now. Jankum Pog just, I don't know, he just doesn't have too much depth to me. So I hope they expand on him a little bit. Okay, that being said, all of the fan service in here was awesome. Of course, you had Dahl, you know, playing that Katara game that Wesley gets addicted to in that TNG episode, The Game. You get Janeway taking us through a whole bunch of different episodes when she introduces the holodeck and what it's capable of, which was really cool. I liked that when they brought back all those legacy characters, they brought them back in different uniforms. You know, they had Uhura was like in the old style, but they brought Scotty back in the movie uniforms. You know, Odo coming back and just being like, ooh, that was pretty funny. And so overall, I really, and then the Chakotay reveal at the end was really cool. So I really am still digging Prodigy personally. I really think the Protostar is a super cool ship. There was a lot that I liked about this episode, and I like the kind of lesson that Dal learns in the end, and I think it's supposed to make him a better captain, and I hope that he actually changes and isn't just quite so snarky in the next episode.
All right, I have one more clip to play since Eric with the cat out of the bag and he's running around the house now. I've got one more clip to play that I was going to talk about, but we'll do it now. And this is called My First Crew.
Ooh, who are they?
Megan. This is Captain
Chakotay
of the USS Protostar.
Chakotay? He's the captain?
Captain, warning. We're being boarded.
I'm suddenly realizing you aren't my first crew.
Dun, 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 dun. Dun, 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 dun. What a cliffhanger, huh?
Well, in my defense, too, one of our fans had mentioned the reveal early as well. But, yeah, cool to see him again because he is a character that I, despite his shortcomings in Voyager, I still liked. I thought he was an excellent pair for Kate Mulgrew's Janeway.
So I guess the question becomes, you know, does the Diviner have Chakotay and the crew on the planet still? Because they're listed in the credits as appearing in like 8 or 9 episodes. And I think it would get kind of redundant if everyone keeps coming back as a hologram. So, you know, I have to think that.
Right.
You know,
and are they going to go back? I mean, they've gone 4,000 light years in one direction now. And so the Diviner and all them are 4,000 light years behind them. Are they going to go back? Or are they going to find them along the way? I don't know.
I think they're gonna go back and try to rescue him. Is what I think. But
now,
what I think doesn't matter.
In this episode, is this the one that I just want to make sure I'm not? I haven't watched tonight's episode.
Well, then you're fine.
But I just want to make sure that this is the episode that it says 17 years ago. Is that this episode? And it gives a start date.
Yeah.
Okay. So I was watching other YouTube channels. Obviously, this isn't a YouTube channel, but I was watching YouTube channels. And in the comment section of those YouTube channels, and then they've discussed after the fact that the star date that's given and the fact that it says 17 years ago, the star date that's given is actually like a week after the battle at Wolf 359.
Oh,
so if they
it's
had
not,
been searching for the Protostar
right.
since before the Battle of Wolf 359, then we're dealing with some temporal shenanigans in this series. I don't know if you guys caught that or not.
Well, I didn't catch that, but now it makes total sense, and I was wondering if maybe that's kind of a big secret about the engine. Maybe that's how it goes so fast, is it's like some kind of temporal thing. Huh. Interesting.
Very fascinating. Fascinating. My eyebrow is going up right now. Fascinating.
Only one.
Yeah. So, Shannon, what did you think about this episode, and what would you score it on 1 to 10?
Okay, as an adult watching it, or for a kid, because it's a completely different score.
Well, whatever makes your boat flow, whatever you want to share with us.
Well, I think it'd be good for kids more than for adults, like other than the fan service, which was fun to watch, but it didn't leave an impression because I had to go back and watch again because I didn't really remember any of it other than the fan service. So, you know, I'd give it like a 5 because it doesn't really, you know, it's the same thing we see every time. We all know how to beat the Kobayashi's cheating. So is that really wanting to show the kids to do that? No.
I think that if you had never seen Star Trek and you were a younger viewer, you wouldn't know what the Kobayashi Maru is. Maybe, you know, you wouldn't know Odo, Spock, you wouldn't know any of these people.
Right.
So it's a good introduction for viewers that don't know, especially younger viewers that would know. But for us, yeah, we've seen that 1,000 times. So, yep. All right. Well, that swings us right around, to back to Las Vegas, but this time, Charles.
Well, one of the things that I caught the first watching was when I watched and I started to turn away from the credits, and then I looked at, like, wait a minute, I had to backtrack and look at the credits. And did anybody get a chance to see the first page of the credits?
Yeah, the dedication that they were talking about, that Nate was talking about.
Yep.
In memory of Rene
Arbor. Yep.
James
Doohan
and Leonard Nimoy, who inspired us to go boldly. And I saw that and just, wow. Then I saw the actual credits in there. And you were talking about, well, we got to get the quality in there. I wonder if, one, because they were copying items, that they had a limited amount of editing they could actually do to those actual quotes. But I also wonder if it was a bit, because I do know that I've heard that the guys from Shipyards, went through and did get every quote sourced. But I wonder if the idea that the quality was a little rough was to make them a little more of a dedication to the Star Trek fan, the dedicated Star Trek fan.
You mean in less than that way intentionally?
Be like, oh, geez. Yeah, intentionally by saying, oh, the kids are going to sit there and not maybe worry about this. Oh, it sounds off a little bit. Whereas the parents are going to be, some of the parents are going to be like, oh, I wonder what, okay, which line was, okay, that was from that episode. Well, that might have been from that episode, where I think it was a little bit of a homage to the Trekkies watching to kind of gather, okay, let's make them a little unclear so that maybe we're going to get the fans, the Trekkies, talking about this episode. It's like, oh, they're going to want to start watching the series too. Wonder what might happen and what they might throw in.
You know, I think you're onto something, Charles. I think you're absolutely right.
Go ahead.
If they go back and they remaster and re-edit that audio, they're altering it, and then they'd have to pay to show it, like they did with Trials and Tribulations and Voyager's Flashback. But if they use them as they are, Paramount owns the rights to that audio, and they can use that audio over and over and over again without having to pay residuals. But if they go back and they remaster it, now they're altering it. It's no longer the same. And then I think it might fall under the residuals clause, and I don't think they wanted to get into paying out all, you know, extra money, so they just use the originals. I think you might be onto something.
You're probably right, but man, we have the technology. Come on.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, but if you tweak them too much, then you're going to sit there and get into a lot of higher costs. Now, we always complain about the Beastie Boys in Star Trek 2009 series. When he blasted the music, at least the opener to it. What was the song?
Thunder.
Yeah, it was AC/DC.
Yeah, AC/DC Thunderstruck.
Thunderstruck by AC/DC. I thought that was an interesting choice to put that one on there. They kind of worked out. They kind of tweaked that song a little bit so you couldn't quite tell it. But even a closed caption kind of caught that right at the beginning. It's like, oh. This is Thunderstruck by AC/DC. It's like, oh, interesting choice in there. But I liked how he kind of sat there and did this. He kind of did that. Okay, let's make it so loud that it disrupts the Klingon. And it's like, yes, let's let's send off our warp core. It's like, okay, that's, I wouldn't have thought about that way. That was an interesting way of going after the three Klingon ships. But then, of course, he goes through and wipes out his own ship. But I like how the computer turns around and says, oh, well, this is a no-win situation. And I like the computer saying that. That was always the crew kind of stating that. So I like the computer actually admitting, yes, this is a no-win situation.
And what would you score on a scale of 1 to 10?
I'm going to go just a little bit of the fan. Let's have an
8.3. Yeah, you know, I think I'm right there with you, Charles. 8.2, 8.3. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed seeing the Kobayashi Maru being tried all the different ways. Just think about it. If you were as a fan, if they had a Kobayashi Maru game and you had to play it on your computer or whatever, how would you try to beat it? And I was watching all the different ways he was trying to come up with, and you know, and I love the Klingons in the episode when he's blaring the music and the Klingons are like, "What the hell is this?" I thought that was humorous.
Yeah.
I did enjoy it, and especially the memorandum. I actually had to go back and pause it to read what was on the screen because when I was watching it. It immediately went to the next episode, and I was like, no, you idiots. I want to read that. So I had to go back and rewatch that screen. So, yeah, I did enjoy those.
Too. I went through those a little slower, looking through some of those credits, because I was like, oh, no, I got to see some of those credits.
But Chakotay popping up at the end, I thought was I wasn't expecting that. I was still reeling from seeing Spock and Odo and Scotty, and here Chakotay shows up, and I was like, "Wow, they're really dropping everything on us in this episode, aren't they?" So I was happy to see Captain Chakotay. So we'll have to wait and see where it goes.
So this was a good episode for the kids. At the same time, and I think a real good homage to the Trekkies.
Yeah, I think it was well balanced. We're out of time, believe it or not. So I want to say thank you so much to Shannon for calling in and hanging out with us and Trek talking with us tonight. Thank you so much, Shannon.
Thanks for letting me come on.
Oh, hey, we have a caller. We have a caller on the line before we go. Let's see. Hey, good evening. Thank you for calling Trek Talking. What's your name and where are you calling us from tonight?
Hello. This Ray? Yeah.
Hey.
This Ray.
Ray, what's up, Ray?
How you doing, my brother? How you doing? I'm sorry I came in late. I'm sorry. I was walking in the house. You know what I'm saying? I was walking in the house just now. I'm sorry about that. They came in the right time?
No, the show is pretty much over. We're just saying goodnight, Ray. I think we missed you. Sorry about that.
I know. I'm sorry. Okay, my brother. Okay. Can I let about like 2 minutes, at least?
We'll try to squeeze you in before we run out of time.
Okay. I'm sorry about that. You know, I'm sorry about that. But you know what I'm saying? I know I missed a lot of shows. I've been working and everything else, you know, blah, blah. But you know, I love going back to school one more time. I just been watching the episode of Piece of Action, and that was my favorite flick, yo. Piece of Action. The gangs right there. That's all I want you guys to know.
Excellent. That's a good episode.
Yeah.
All right, Ray. Well, we got to get going because we're out of time. So I got to cut you loose here. But thanks for calling, Ray.
No problem. I call Nathan on time. I switch on time.
All right. Thanks a lot, Ray. Have a good night.
You too, bud. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
All right.
So I want to say thank you to Eric for hanging out and Trek talking with us tonight. Eric, thank you so much.
You better believe it. Thanks very much. That was fun.
And we definitely got to say thank you so much to our very own Charles for hanging out and Trek talking with us. Thank you, Charles.
Oh, what a fun show tonight.
Yeah, it was great. And thank you so much to Shannon for hanging out with us. And yeah, it was fun. And Nathan, thank mm-hmm. you so much, Nathan. And of course, we have to say thank you to Noah himself. It was great to talk to Noah. Didn't you guys have a lot of fun talking with Noah tonight?
Yeah, he was really cool. Yeah, great guest. And he loved mm-hmm. to tell good stories, which always makes for a great interview.
Yeah, he was a lot of fun, and maybe we'll have to have him back on again later. And thanks to Ray for calling in from the Bronx, even though it was late. We appreciate that. Thank you, Ray. And, of course, I'm your most excellent host, Uncle Jim, and I want to say to everybody, please stay safe and be good to each other. Remember, Star Trek fans are the best fans. And we'll be back next week, same bat time, same bat channel. We'll be talking about the Prodigy episode that's on right now tonight. I haven't watched it yet, but I will. And whatever the title of that episode is, we'll be talking about that next week. And go to our Facebook page. Give us a like. Give us a follow. I didn't – did I do the numbers? I don't think I did. Did I?
I don't think so.
Nope. We sort of skipped over that at the beginning of the show, but that's okay because we got more time with Noah.
Yeah, I think I missed that. But let me go back up to the beginning here. Yeah. So we have 80,699 followers on our Facebook page. So let's see if we can get that up to 81,000 before next week. You can do that by heading over to our Facebook page, Trek Talking and Beyond. Spell that all out. You'll see the Live Long and Prosper at the top. Give us a like. Give us a follow. Tell us where you're from. If there's a heart next to your name, that means I chose you, and you'll be mentioned on a future fan shout-out. And as of right now, we have 75,769 downloads of this podcast. That's just awesome. That's just incredible. And it wouldn't be possible without you guys, the fans. So thank you so much. And without any further ado, we are out of time. So thank you so much, everybody. Be good to each other. Stay safe. Hailing frequencies are closed. Good night, everybody.
Bye, y'all.
Live long and prosper.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.